If you'd like a title for the second split sermon today, it's this. Is this the man? Is this the man? And by the way, thank you to the choir and the musicians today. It's very beautiful. I know it takes a lot of extra effort and concentration on this holy day specifically to put all that energy into praising God. I'm happy that we're afflicting our souls, our physical bodies, but not our spirits on this day. You know, when Jesus Christ returns, he will overthrow the false political, economic, and religious systems ruled over by the beast power and the false prophet. The book of Revelation refers to this system as Babylon the Great, and we'll look at that a little bit later in the message. But the beast and the false prophet will simply be the servants of a greater spiritual master. Their power will come from the god of this present world, Satan the devil. This world's myriad systems of government, economics, and religion are derived from Satan's inspiration. The Day of Atonement, as we've already heard, pictures the coming imprisonment of Satan, which will allow humanity to finally be set free from generations of satanic deception and satanic manipulation, and to be offered the hope of reconciliation with God. Reconciliation is what this day is all about. Please turn with me to Isaiah chapter 14. Mr. Flamin has been there already, but we do overlap on a few scriptures, and that's all right. We'll look at them from a different perspective. Because here we see a reference to Satan the devil, who was originally known as the archangel Lucifer, in Isaiah 14 and verse 12. And it says this, "How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How are you cut down to the ground or to the earth? You who weakened the nations, you who weakened the nations." Now, if the world is to be reconciled to God, as this day pictures, then all of the world's nations and peoples will have to accept the truth that they have been deceived into serving Satan. In this message, we'll focus on three of the many ways in which Satan has weakened the nations and deceived all the peoples of the earth. We'll see that Satan has weakened the nations through inspiring flawed political systems, corrupt economic systems, and false religious systems. Now let's begin by looking at the context in which Isaiah 14 verse 12 is set. So let's please turn back to actually chapter 13 of Isaiah to see the context here. Isaiah chapter 13. Here God is revealing a coming judgment against Babylon. And as we will see, this is a dualistic prophecy. It refers not only to the fall of the ancient city of Babylon, but also to the coming fall of the system known as Babylon, Babylon the Great at the end of this age. Let's pick it up here in Isaiah 13. We'll start in verse 9 and we'll read through verse 13. Behold, the day of the Lord comes. Now we know that phrase, right? The day of the Lord generally refers to that day yet ahead. Cruel, with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. Now, this has never happened, right, in history. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. I will punish the world for its evil. Notice not just Babylon. I will punish the world for its evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. And that word in Hebrew actually could better be translated the terrible one or the oppressor. I will lay low the haughtiness of the oppressor. I will make a mortal more rare than fine gold, a man more than the golden wedge of Ophir. Therefore, I will shake the heavens. That's not happened yet either, right? That can't be a reference to the king of ancient Babylon. And the earth will move out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts and in the day of his fierce anger. So as we can see, the prophecy against the ancient city of Babylon now takes on a larger meaning. God now talks about not just punishing that city of ancient Babylon, but the entire world is the theme here. A reference to the day of the Lord coming and the day of his fierce anger. These are clearly end time references. And who will be the focus of God's wrath? Let's look again at verse 11. God refers to laying low the arrogance of the proud and the haughtiness of the terrible one or the oppressor. Is this a reference to Satan the devil, the true power behind Babylon the Great at the end of this age? Let's move on then to chapter 14 with that context, because Isaiah 14 brings up Satan specifically, and it seems to indicate that possibility. We're going to begin, please, in Isaiah 14, verse 3. Again, remember, we're dealing with dualism in this prophecy. God is giving a prophecy against the king of Babylon. So it applies to the ancient king of Babylon, as well as to the coming king or beast power, who will be commanding the armies of Babylon the Great at the end time. Isaiah 14 and verse 3. And notice the context. It will come to pass in the day the Lord gives you rest from your sorrow and from your fear and the hard bondage in which you were made to serve, that you will take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how the oppressor has ceased. It's that same term, how the oppressor has ceased, the golden city ceased. The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked, the scepter of the rulers. He who struck the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he who ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and no one hinders. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. They break forth into singing. Now, this is not just a reference to the Jewish people being freed from Babylonian captivity in ancient times. It now talks about a future time when the whole earth is at rest and at peace, when the whole of the people are singing with joy. That time hasn't come yet. This is a reference to the time after Christ's return, when the oppressor will be put down. Verse 8, indeed the cypress trees rejoice over you and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since you were cut down, no woodsman has come up against us. Hell from beneath is excited about you to meet you at your coming. It stirs up the dead for you, all the chief ones of the earth. It has raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. They all shall speak and say to you, have you also become as weak as we? Have you become like us? Your pomp is brought down to Sheol, to the grave, and the sound of your stringed instruments, the maggot is spread under you and the worms cover you. Now, this is likely a reference to the human king of Babylon. But notice, he's to be humbled. His pride and pompousness are broken. But on that same thought, the context shifts. the prophecy now shifts clearly to a reference to the spiritual king of Babylon, Satan himself. How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How are you cut down to the ground? You who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. See, even before Adam and Eve were created, the archangel Lucifer rebelled against God and the Word. And God cast him to the ground, to the earth. He ceased to be Lucifer, the bringer of God's light to the earth. And he became the prince of darkness. His pompousness and his arrogance were humbled. Now notice verses 15 to 17. We now return from a specific comment about Lucifer's fall to the dual prophecy again that can refer both to Satan and to the human king of Babylon, either in ancient times or in the time to come, Babylon the Great. So keep that duality in mind. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. Those who see you will gaze at you and consider you, saying, is this the man? Is this the one who made the earth tremble? Who shook kingdoms? Who made the world as a wilderness and destroyed its cities? Who did not open the house of his prisoners? This was the guy? Now, certainly the ancient king of Babylon terrorized the world of his generation, but his power did not extend to the entire earth. He did not make all the earth tremble. He did not cause the destruction of all the world's cities. The coming king of Babylon the Great, the beast power, will be responsible for destruction of that magnitude. But as we understand, that beast power will only be a servant of Satan the devil, the true spiritual king of Babylon. By the end time, it will be Satan who has made the earth tremble. He is the one who will have shaken kingdoms and turned the world into a wilderness, a desolation, that word means. Desolation. Inspiring the world's rulers to wage wars of terrible destruction. It is he who has held the world captive for 6,000 years, not opening the house of his prisoners. Now, we just a few days ago looked forward to the return of Jesus Christ and that symbolism of freeing those prisoners. And so you can see Satan the devil definitely fits this description along with a physical king of Babylon. The phrase, is this the man, that word could mean a male human or it could mean the one. Is this the person, the one, who made the earth to tremble, could refer to that ancient king, or to the beast power, or to Satan, or to all three. When Satan is overthrown as this world's ruler and he is cast to the bottomless pit, the world will truly see him for who he is, the originator of sin, the author of it, the father of lies, the enemy of God and the enemy of all mankind. And they will marvel, they will gaze at him, saying, has this one entity caused all this grief for humanity for all the ages? Let's look at Revelation chapter 20, verses 1 through 3, because here we see a prophecy of Satan's confinement. Revelation 20. And we'll look at verses 1 through 3. This is following Christ's return, and the Day of Atonement pictures this removal of Satan from the throne of this earth. And more importantly, not that that isn't important, but more importantly, the severing of his spiritual influence over humanity on this day. Revelation 20, verse 1. John's vision here, "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand." Now remember the symbolism of Isaiah 14, 15. "You shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit." A bottomless pit is pretty deep. There's no bottom to it, right? And we don't understand what that is that God will arrange, but it's a deep pit. Verse 2, "He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal on him so that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years were finished. But after these things, he must be released for a little while." And at the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day, we'll hear about that stage of God's plan. But this Day of Atonement pictures the restoration of hope to humanity for reconciliation with God. And that reconciliation cannot begin until the world at large is freed from Satan's influence, until that spiritual influence is neutralized, and they can truly accept God's laws and God's plan. Now let's look in more detail at three of the major ways in which Satan has weakened the nations through his spiritual influence. Mr. Flamin talked about some of the lies. Today, let's talk about some of the institutions that go along with those lies. Satan has inspired humans to create flawed political systems. Adam's descendants, separated from God's instruction and influence, had to create their own systems of governance. Where did they come up with those ideas, the variety of governmental systems that have been tried over the last 6,000 years? Well, let's look at Ephesians chapter 2. Again, Mr. Flamin mentioned this, but let's look at it in this context. Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Because here we see that many of the ideas and actions of human beings down through time have been inspired or influenced by Satan. Ephesians 2, starting in verse 1. "And you he made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world." We were a part of it. "According to the prince of the power of the air." This is a ruler. A prince is a ruler. "The prince of the power of the air, the spirit," referring to Satan, "the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we once conducted ourselves in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others." If we in the world have been or are children of wrath, who's the father of it? Satan is the father of wrath. Satan's attitudes and spiritual signal permeate the air around us. And Mr. Flamin talked about the radio signals that Mr. Armstrong had discussed in his writings. I think we need to upgrade that. Let's think Wi-Fi. Satanic Wi-Fi. The signal is pervasive. We cannot see it, but it surrounds us as we sit in school or drive to work or relax in our homes. The satanic Wi-Fi is everywhere. But in the case of Satan, our human minds have a built-in Bluetooth connection. We are in on Satan's signal. and Satan's Wi-Fi is booming. And it has been for thousands of years. And that spirit has influenced the development of all humanity, of all humanly devised systems of government throughout history. Lots of government systems have been tried, but all of them are flawed. Do we believe that? Every one of them is flawed. Now, some might not be as bad as others, but they are not God's way of governance. They all rely on the premise that some human being should gain and exercise power to control other human beings. They only differ on how to accomplish that. And what are the goals of that power? It's easy to see Satan's spiritual influence at work in the rule of totalitarian dictators or the administration of oligarchs. Hereditary human monarchies are no better, and all tend toward the abuse of power. And we have to add to that list republics and democracies. In these systems, right and wrong are determined by the votes of human majorities. Human majorities. Now, they may work for a time if the majority of the people are guided by godly principles. But when the bulk of the population leans towards immorality, the majority uses its power to impose its will on the minority. And many republics have failed over time due to this inherent flaw. The Roman Republic, Germany's Weimar Republic, what about our American Republic? As of yesterday, much of our government is closed because the people's elected representatives cannot agree on a budget. And so we endure chaos and uncertainty as the political parties and factions within those parties squabble over the exercise of power and the allocation of national wealth. Who holds the power? What do they do with it? Let's look at Ephesians 6, verses 11 through 12. Ephesians chapter 6. All humanly devised governments have failed to even come close to the beneficent rule that God has in mind for humanity under Jesus Christ. Only He will administer true justice. Ephesians 6, verses 11 through 12. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Yes, Satan the devil has been very effective at weakening the world's nations by inspiring its myriad flawed political systems. And wittingly or unwittingly, most of them are influenced by Satan in decisions that they make. The second institution that we should look at is economic systems. Economic systems. Satan's also been very effective at inspiring a variety of corrupt economic systems through human history. Let's go to Ezekiel. Chapter 28, Ezekiel 28. We'll look at verses 11 through 17 here. Because here we see another biblical passage that uses prophetic dualism, just as we saw in Isaiah 14. Here the passage switches back and forth between a prophecy against a human prince of Tyre, prosperous Phoenician city that was north of Israel, and the king of Tyre, who, as we'll see, is the real spiritual power behind the human ruler's throne. Ezekiel 28, verse 11. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation for the king of Tyre, and say to him, Thus says the Lord God, you were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom, perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Now, there's only a few people who were there. There was Adam, there was Eve, there was God, and there was the serpent, Satan. So it's clear who is being referred to here. This is not the human king of the city of Tyre. This is Satan. Every precious stone was your covering, and it goes through that list. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day you were created. This was a magnificent being. You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones. You were at the center of the universe. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created until iniquity was found in you. Sin began in you. Now here God gives us insight into Lucifer's status before his rebellion against God. And notice that this is presented as a lamentation, a song of sorrow, God's sorrow. God grieves over Lucifer's choice to reject him. It hurts him. God trusted Lucifer with rulership over the entire earth, and that was not enough. And he became Satan. He lusted after more power and relished his authority and his status, his prestige. And then we see a somewhat puzzling reference to an economy existing here on the earth long before Adam and Eve were created. We don't know what that involved. Angels here on the earth, physical creatures, dinosaurs. We don't know all that is being referred to here. But notice verse 16, still referring to Satan. By the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence within, wrath. And you sinned. Therefore, I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God. And I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stones. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. But you corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. I cast you to the ground. I laid you before kings that they might gaze at you. That they might gaze at you. Now, this, of course, reminds us of that passage we saw in Isaiah 14. Those who see you will gaze at you and consider you, saying, Is this the man who made the earth tremble? You know, the history of the world has in many ways been the history of the struggle between individuals, tribes, and nations for control of limited resources, limited natural resources. So humans have tried a variety of economic systems over the centuries, but all have proven to be susceptible to corruption due to being based on the way of get, which emanates from Satan's spiritual Wi-Fi. Now, here in the United States, we recognize the inherent flaws of socialism and communism, whose underlying principles call for the government seizing the fruits of labor of some and redistributing it for the use of all. These economies are known as command economies, because whatever the government system is that holds power in such societies, it's that government that determines what wealth will be confiscated and who will benefit from the confiscation. Ideas come back around, don't they? They're tried, they fail, they're tried again. Their popularity waxes and wanes. We're seeing that even today. But then there are market economies, such as capitalism, which are also inherently corrupt. A greed is good mentality dominates many highly speculative markets. Inevitably, a vast gap emerges in such societies between the very wealthy and the very poor, the haves and the have-nots. It was a problem in ancient Rome, it was a problem in ancient Greece, it was a problem in ancient China, it was a problem in Europe. Revolutions start over that disparity. We haven't figured that out yet, because resources are still limited. And so we argue about budgets and who gets how much. But God's economic system, which he revealed to ancient Israel, though they didn't follow it very well, included safety valves to allow for the accumulation of private wealth and property, but also the institution of a third tithe to assist the poor, periodic years of release from debt, and jubilee years when the land would return to the control of families who, for whatever reason, had lost control of the family estate. See, God's system is superior, but that's not the way Satan thinks or inspires. Let's go to Matthew 6. Matthew 6. Look at verses 19 to 24. Now, I know a lot of people get upset when you talk about capitalism, especially in the United States. Maybe it's currently the least offensive of man's economic systems. But the greatest threat that lies in capitalism is it tends toward idolatry. The worship of accumulating wealth for the sake of gaining more wealth, which is used to accumulate stuff. And if God's not a part of that picture, just purely the way of get. Matthew 6, 19. This is Jesus speaking. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. You know, Satan apparently was laying up a lot of treasures on earth when he was the one in charge, and in a sense still is. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Satan's treasure wasn't with God when he rebelled. He had some other system he'd cooked up. The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Isn't that what this day is all about? Humanity cannot serve two masters. Many people have unknowingly been trying to do just that, saying they serve God, but actually serving Satan and his institutions. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon, wealth. Whatever your economic system, it's not a long-term solution. At the heart of all these humanly devised economic systems is the way of get, Satan's way. And Satan the devil has been very effective at weakening the world's nations by inspiring its myriad corrupt economic systems. So let's go to the third one, religious systems. The last of the three ways in which Satan has weakened the nations and deceived all peoples of the earth is in the creation of these false religions. False religions. Mr. Flamin referred to 2 Corinthians 11 about how Satan transforms himself into an angel of light. But I'd like us to go, please, to 1 John 5, 18 to 20. He covered that part very well, so let's move on to 1 John 5. Because here we see confirmation that Satan's influence has deceived the whole world through false religious doctrines, including hundreds and hundreds of the world's Christian denominations. 1 John 5, starting here in verse 18. We know, right, we have God's Spirit, so we know that whoever is born of God does not sin or continue in sin, but he who has been born of God keeps himself, and the wicked one does not touch him. We know that we are of God, and the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one, or lies under the wicked one. That's the power. That's the God of this world right now. Verse 20, and we know that the Son of God has come and has given us an understanding. What an understanding. As we drove here today, we passed all kinds of restaurants and all kinds of people lined up at the drive-thrus and people going back and forth to work, right? Engaging in their regular lives. They don't have this understanding yet. What a gift it is to know God's plan, to know our role in it, and the hope that all humanity has to be reconciled to God. He's given us that understanding now, that we may know him who is true, and we are in him who is true, in his Son, Jesus Christ. This is the true God and eternal life. But there's a false system. It's already here, but it's here in many different names. But there's one main one coming. And if you'll turn with me, please, to the book of Revelation, chapter 17. And those of you who have my notes, this is an addition. Sorry about that. Revelation chapter 17, because we come back to the idea of Babylon and the king of Babylon. We're going to start here in Revelation 17 and verse 1. Then one of the seven angels who had seen the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, curses against the true God, having seven heads and 10 horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornications. And on her head, her forehead, a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, God's true church, and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus, God's true servants. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. But the angel said to me, "Why did you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition." There's that pit again. "And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is." Let's skip to verse 15. "Then he said to me, 'The waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples,'" right? Races, ethnic groups, "multitudes, nations, and tongues, all the languages of the world will be praising this false church. And the ten horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth." Now, in prophecy, that world system is called Babylon. And some have speculated that that becomes transferred to Rome, right? So that's a whole other message. But we clearly see that at the end times, Satan's religious deception will be pervasive. And it seems that instead of thousands of different religions, people have come aboard onto this one to give their support to it and to worship. So as we've seen today, Satan has weakened the nations through inspiring flawed political systems and corrupt economic systems and false religious systems. In his arrogance and pride, Lucifer the archangel believed that he would make a better God than God. And he rebelled. And as a result of Satan's spiritual Wi-Fi signal, humanity has been deeply troubled and enslaved by sin. Now I'd like to conclude with James chapter 4. James chapter 4. We'll look at verses 4 through 10. And I'd like you, as we read this, I'd like you to keep in mind that when we afflict our souls and humble ourselves before God, as we do on this Day of Atonement, we are demonstrating the opposite of Satan's pompous attitude and prideful nature. It's a day of deep reflection. It's a day of sorrow over sins. But it's also a day of that hope, of reconciliation for all humanity. The church first, and then all the rest of the world in time to come. Today we show God that we as first fruits want to gladly submit to his rule over us. We welcome his power, his intervention. And when the events that this day pictures are fulfilled and Satan is humbled and imprisoned in that pit, the world will sing. They will sing with joy at the prospect of being reconciled to God the Father and to Jesus Christ. And we see that attitude that we have on this day rewarded by God here in James chapter 4. Verse 4, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. If you love those systems, there's a problem. Or do you think that the scripture says in vain, the spirit which dwells in us yearns jealously, but he gives more grace? Therefore, he, God says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep over how we used to be, how the world still is. Let your laughter, on this day at least, let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom or sorrow. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. Satan was thrown down. We will be lifted up. Hope you have a meaningful remainder of this special holy day and an easy end to the fast.